back, Long Island. You're listening to DDI on Autism on 103.9 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Romas. Continue my conversation with Emily Hull, the director of the Sibling Support Project, the first national program dedicated to the lifelong and ever-changing concerns of millions of brothers and sisters of people with special developmental and health concerns. You know, Emily, we left off and we're just beginning to talk a little bit about the kinds of issues that are a function of different ages. And therefore, you've divided, I believe, or separated some of the groups based on whether they're teens or adults or young children. And as we were talking a little bit about during the short break, with that comes differences within the families as well, because usually young kids mean younger parents. And of course, all the opposite, and younger siblings. So let's talk a little bit about how those issues are distinguished.
Sure. So I think, first of all, some of the issues that siblings experience sort of persist throughout the lifespan. And we have to remember that, you know, these brothers and sisters are going to share the longest relationships with the person with the disability. Longer than any service provider, certainly, and longer even than parents in most cases, which is kind of a hard thing for parents to think about sometimes. But it's really true. We are our siblings' contemporaries. And so we're going to have our issues for longer, and we are going to have our relationships with our brothers and sisters for longer. And so one of the issues that siblings commonly experience is probably one of the most important ones that really parallels the parent experience is the need for information. So need for information about the disability, about the special health concern. And it's something that parents often kind of shy away from. When we think about where parents get information from, right? We think about parents have access to doctors and clinicians and therapists and all kinds of professionals. If siblings are lucky, you know, they get information from parents. Mm-hmm. And all too often that doesn't happen for the best, most loving reasons. A lot of times parents don't want to burden their other children. They don't want to confuse their other children. They don't want to upset their other children. But I think what parents sometimes could benefit from sort of looking at is the fact that, you know, their other children are experiencing the disability too. Right? Like it's already happening and not talking about it is not going to make it go away. And so it can be really, really helpful for parents to share information with their kids in age-appropriate language and also to make professionals available to young siblings. We often talk with professionals and we say, you know, a little can go such a long way in terms of spending 10 minutes with a sibling, maybe at the beginning of a therapy session or the end of a therapy session, to maybe answer some questions, to see kind of what the child's thinking about. Do they have questions about the disability, about the therapy? A lot of siblings grow up, they see their brothers and sisters going to these appointments, and maybe it's a physical therapy appointment. They get to play with all these really fun toys, right? The equipment looks a lot like a lot of fun. And so we love it when professionals invite siblings into those sessions, maybe for a few minutes to explore the equipment and to talk about how, you know, it's really hard work for your brother or your sister to use this. And this is what we're working on. You know, we're working on gross motor skill development, and this is what that means. So that can be really, really helpful. That need for information is really important for kids, for preschoolers to understand that they didn't cause the disability and they can't catch it, which think about logically how a very young child makes sense of the world through observation of routine and behavior, right? So their definition of autism might be, well, my brother really, really likes Thomas the Tank Engine, and he lines his trains up really, really straight in a line, and he doesn't really look at us when we talk to him, but that's okay. You know, for like a four-year-old, that's a pretty good definition of autism because you can build on it as that child's understanding of the world becomes more sophisticated. For school age kids, they need to know, they need to have some kind of language to explain the disability to themselves and to others, other kids who might ask questions in not the nicest of ways, right? We know that kids can not always be nice, especially like on a playground. You might hear, well, what's wrong with your brother? Is the same thing wrong with you? Kids need to have language that they can make sense of what's happening with their siblings themselves, but also to respond to those questions. And we politely disagree with parents who choose not to use the A word in their house, right? Mm-hmm. They don't say the word autism, mm-hmm. because having a word like autism to respond to those questions and to kind of shut down that conversation can be really empowering for a sibling who can say, actually, my brother has autism and it means his brain works a little bit different and he doesn't do things the same way that we do them. End of conversation, right? And again, you can kind of build on that understanding later as the child gets older. And then finally, the need for information for even teens and adults especially. They need information about future plans. Believe it or not, even siblings who are teenagers and younger are already thinking about the future. Who's going to take care of my brother or sister? Where will they live? How will we have enough money to take care of him or her? Those are conversations that need to start early. We encourage parents and teachers to invite siblings to participate in IEP meetings, for example. Every transition point, it's so valuable to have a sibling perspective. Siblings know their brothers and sisters in ways that others don't, but also to give that sibling a voice and an understanding of the future plan can be really, really helpful. Adult siblings, imagine it. This is a common story. I read it every day in SibNet, our group for adult siblings. It's a story that I experienced, that I lived, that I'm living. My situation is different. We can talk about that. But this is the common story that I hear. My adult brother or sister lives at home with my aging parents, our aging parents. Our parents' health is not great. And I'm looking down the road in the not too distant future, and I'm realizing that my life is going to change dramatically when my parents are no longer able to care for my brother or sister. And then a panic sets in because, well, a lot of times those siblings haven't been involved in the daily care of their brother or sister. If there are service providers involved, they don't know who they are or what their service plan entails. And so facing that role as a caregiver can be really, really daunting. And so that's why we encourage parents and service providers to include siblings in conversations about the person with the disability with the person with the disability. Can be really, really empowering. So that need for information, I think, touches upon all stages of life for a sibling.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And you're really describing, I think, very thoroughly, not only the need for that information, but how that need should be disseminated and tailored at a particular moment in life. And what really caught my interest, and I suspect for some of the listeners too, is how young siblings can internalize the full weight of that responsibility, and that while we may be looking in another way and hoping that, and maybe for good intentions, saying we want my typically developing child to be happy and fun and carefree, but, and we do, that doesn't mean, and this is the point I think you've made so emphatically, that doesn't really mean that they are not still thinking about that stuff. And then when you talk a little bit about how you're kind of thrust into that role of a caretaker or anticipated being thrust into that role. I mean, in a very analogous way, I think about adults who suddenly find themselves taking care of a parent who, all for other reasons, may have a disability or a dementia or a cognitive concern, and how they're kind of thrust into this. And at least what I'm hearing, Emily, is that to the extent that we can anticipate that, we set a child up for, or let me put it this way, a typically developing sibling up for a better response for a more informed and perhaps a more confident response. I can't believe how quickly this time has gone. And I have 8 million more questions than I think our listeners do as well. I'd like to invite you back. So I hope you'll come back. In fact, we're going to definitely make this a part one and two. So I'm going to invite listeners to come back next week. You know, you've been listening to DDI and Autism on 103.9 FM. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Romas. The conversation has been all about siblings and those special challenges. My guest is Emily Hall, the director of the Sibling Support Project.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well,
views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station, JVC Broadcasting Management, or its sponsors.